I mean, they're taking business away, but they don't have the bikes I do. But I'm still, for some reason, I'm sure I'm losing some of my business to them. And then Tom, my friend's got more of an upper end store up the street, and I think that's hurt me a little bit. So probably all of those combined.
Okay. Richard, would you like to have more growth?
Well, sure.
Yeah. What would you like to see happen? Where would you like to be? Let's say we look down the road 12 months from now. Where would you like to be?
Well, I'd like to grow. I'd like to hit a half million. If I could hit a half a million, I could pay the bills and finally take a little salary home and have a little profit left over.
Okay, so you need about a 25% increase then, yeah. Right? Another $100,000. Okay, well, let's see if we can maybe figure out some ways in which maybe we could do that. And I know you said one of the biggest challenges that you face is the Walmarts and the Shopko, you know, the big discount stores. And they're probably beating you up pretty bad on price.
Yeah.
Are they? Why, then, should I do business with you? You know, I mean, why not just go down to Walmart or Shopko? Why should I come here to Speedy Bikes?
I'm sorry you had to ask that. I mean, geez. They don't have the quality of bikes that I have. I carry a line of bikes that's got a better frame, heavier, better quality bike. And I know for a fact that Walmart's not going to tune your bike up, neither Shopko, but I will. So
you provide all kinds of services?
All services, yeah. Yeah.
What about price? So are you?
Oh, I'm more. Yeah, I'm more. I have to admit it, you know, but I got to. I buy a better bike, and I don't sell the volume those guys do, so I'm sure whatever bike I buy, I'm probably paying a little more for. So I got to get more from the customer.
If I buy one of your bikes versus buying one of the Walmart bikes, how am I going to benefit? What's going to be better for me than buying yours as opposed to theirs?
Bike will last longer. It'll last longer, and I can give you some servicing on the bike.
Okay. So the only reason then people are buying them, the department stores, is because of the price, right?
Well, as far as I know, I can't think of any other reason. You know, I think we give them as good a service as those guys do, and I know bikes, and my staff knows them pretty good, and I don't think that the guy at Walmart does, you know? But I don't know, but I think that's...
Okay. So... your primary strength, then, with your bikes would be, number one, it's better quality.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you provide the service and, you know, tune-ups, and anything goes wrong, you're there to handle it. And I guess probably more expertise as far as helping customer to get the right bike for their needs. And finally, the bikes are going to last longer. Is that pretty much it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, do all of your customers know that? Do all of, you know, does everybody know that in the market?
Well, that's what I say. I'm sorry you had to ask. I mean, if you're from this area, you should know my bikes, but maybe they don't.
What do you say in your ads?
Well, I run a weekend ad in the local paper, and I usually pick a model that I've got some stock in or that manufacturer might do some co-op with me on. Usually run a promotion on it.
Some kind of price special?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, time out. What have we just found here?
He's not sustaining his USP in his advertising.
Okay. We found a hidden marketing asset. Jeff, what is the hidden marketing asset? Yeah, it's an under-promoted USP. See, he's not telling people about it. What's he telling people?
Try to compete with something that's not even straight.
That's right. See, he's advertising and competing on price, and the price is not his strength. Okay? Now, remember that rule of marketing that I told you about this morning? If there's no perception of value, in other words, if I see no difference between his bike and the Walmart bike, which bike am I going to buy? The cheapest bike, right? The one that I that has the lowest price, because I don't perceive any value. So that's one hidden asset, is an under-promoted USP. He's not fully integrated that into all of his marketing.
See, and you'll find that lots of times. You'll find that the owner, like Juliet's, knew clearly what his USP was. Sometimes they don't. So sometimes your job as a consultant may not be as much finding and identifying a USP, although that's 75-80% of your cases. But in this case, I clearly know. But it's clear that maybe my staff doesn't, and my customers don't. See?
This is real typical.
This is real typical. Whereas also, another typical case is, like I had with the screen printer, and we hit a staff there, and we ask all of them what they think the USP is, and you get 10 different answers. See? So,
okay. So all the advertising you do then is pretty much price oriented. What about your staff? Do you feel like they're telling the story of the quality and the bike lasting longer?
Well, it's clear that I'm the best salesman. Okay, I've been here. I know these bikes. I'm out on the floor most of the time in the evenings or late afternoons, and that's when we sell the most bikes, is when I'm on the floor. Now, Tom, he's pretty good. And then I have Bill that comes in part-time, and he's not as good. And I really, I've heard him a little bit, but no, when I usually take the floor, they're gone, and when they're here, I'm back doing the business, and so I don't always hear what goes on.
But what would you say your average closing ratio might be? I mean, it's probably better with you than it would be with
Bill.
Of course.
But,
you know, I mean, you're the master. You're the man.
Well, you're talking overall.
Overall.
Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Even Bill, who's crappy at 1 out of 10.
Yeah, on an average, 10 people come into the business. How many of those 10 would buy?
3.
Okay. What happens to the other 7 that don't buy?
Well, who knows?
What if we just found?
I mean, they probably go buy bikes somewhere else. I mean,
sometimes. Do you ever follow up with them?
I sometimes see them come back in, and so I know they bought from me, but not everyone comes back in, not all 7.
Okay.
Yet I also know that they probably are going to buy a bike, or they wouldn't have come here. So they're going to get a bike pretty soon.
So, but you don't follow up. You don't have any way of knowing did they buy somewhere else, or why they didn't buy from you, or anything else. Huh? Okay. Okay, what have we discovered now?
Another potential market area.
Another marketing asset, right? The asset is what? 7 out of 10 people don't buy. Okay, now, you know, if just a few more of those could be maybe better educated or reworked, brought back in, you know, then.
See, now, what business owner, until he came along, would have looked at the 7 out of 10 as an asset for marketing? Just doesn't happen, see? That's why it's so. I mean, most of them would have not, like me. Well, it's a stupid question. Obviously, they've gone somewhere else.
I mean, if you don't,
they're counted as lost to me. They're counted as dead
dead weight. They're gone. They're history. They're a drag on my balance sheet.
And if you don't see the power of this, look at the fact he only wants a 25% increase. He's closing 3 out of 10 right now. What would happen if he could close 4 out of 10? 33% increase in business. Boom. Like that. How much money has he spent in advertising to do it? Zip. All he's done is done a better job with the asset that he's got. Okay? That's why this is so powerful. Okay. So we don't really know what's happening to the other 70%. Okay, good. We're on page 4. Now, we're looking at... Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you step all the way through this, or do you take the sidebars out and start explaining these things to him?
Yes.
You do make the sidebars then. Okay.
See, what you want to try to do is, you know, when you identify those assets, is tie it down and get him to see it. Get him to see it. You fly to there, Richard. You know, can you imagine? You only want a 25% increase. If we get your closing ratio up from 3 out of 10 to 4 out of 10, that'd give you 33% right there.
Jeez. Okay.
Okay.
What are you going to do? Do you train salespeople?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. That might be one thing to do. Setting up a follow-up system might be another thing.
Okay. You mean where we call them back or something?
Could be. Could be. How much does a customer spend right now?
Oh, you mean a new customer that buys a new bike?
Yeah.
Well, I'd say my average bike probably runs $350 or so. Few of them I sell a service agreement with, which is another $50. Then they might come back, they might buy a helmet, they might buy some other mountain biking supplies, but some might not come back and buy anything at all. And so you're just saying an average amount?
Mm-hmm.
Probably $500.
Okay. Could that be improved? In other words, do you think that you could do a better job in selling the accessories and, you know, the other equipment, you know, over and above?
Well, I'm sure Bill and Tom could. I mean, I
know you're the man. You do it all, right? But they are probably not doing as well as could be done.
Right? No, we could all probably do better.
Okay. How? What do you think needs to be done there?
Well, you're the marketing expert. I sent out at Christmas time kind of a letter for my servicing saying get your bike in before spring comes, and that brings in a few people.
Okay. You do anything else to invite people back?
No.
Do you have a database? Do you know who your who your customers are? How many names do you have on there now?
I think I'm up to probably about 2,000.
Okay. How many of those 2,000 are active? In other words, they bought from you in the past 12 months.
You bought anything from me?
Yeah.
Probably 300 of them.
Okay, so there's about 1,700 then that haven't bought?
Yeah.
Okay. What's that? What have we just found again? Yeah, what is that asset?
It's a prospective customer.
1,700 past customers who haven't been in the last 12 months. You know, maybe they could be reactivated in some way.
Now, would you ask him that? Would you talk about that being a hidden market asset to him?
Yeah, you know, and say, in the fact of, you know, do you ever do anything to invite those customers back? You know, other than your Christmas card, is there any kind of a consistent effort to invite those people back in?
No.
the Christmas card works, or the spring tune-ups or whatever it was that you were doing, that brings a few people in, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You think it might make sense to maybe do that some more. Maybe let's think of some other reasons or other ways or, you know, other things we could use to motivate those people to come in.
Sure.
Again.
Sure.
You see, you've got another asset here, 1,700 people who already trust you, already know you, already viewed you, already bought from you in the past. Maybe they could buy from you again, couldn't they?
Unless the bike fell apart or something.
Do you think it might be important to maybe do something to consistently ask them to do business with you?
So do you guys do that? Do you guys do letters like that?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, see, it probably help.
Okay, so what have we done again here now? What have we done at this point? We've isolated at least three hidden marketing assets, and we've really gotten his commitment to the fact that something could be done about it. Now, what are those three assets? Number one, underpromoted USP. He admits that his customers and prospects don't all know about it. Salespeople might not all know about it. That's one thing, you know, so we need to maybe reintegrate that USP. Number two, he's got a low closing ratio, underperforming salespeople. Only 3 out of 10 people are buying. That means 7 out of 10 are our potential customers that he's not now getting. We've got a customer worth that's, you know, could be brought up. It's 500 now, you know, but there's other accessories, other things that could be brought up. He does it. He does the upsell. He does the add-ons, but his salespeople don't. So there's an opportunity for training in project number two. Then his database. You know, he's got 1,700 people that haven't bought anything in the past year, and he's not doing anything to invite them back in. See, there's all these assets there that could be leveraged and worked on, you know, that are just sitting there. Okay? Y'all see that? Does that make sense? Okay. Richard, who are your customers? How would you describe them, you know, as far as...
They're nice people.
I know, they're nice. What do they do? Where do they live? How old are they?
All American.
I'd say most of them are families,
mm-hmm.
and they're more recreational riding. I don't get a lot of... I get a few high-end mountain bikers, serious riders, but no, my customer is more the just want to go out and take a ride together as a family, maybe go up in the canyon. I sell a lot of cross bikes that let them do a little bit of both, a little bit of the mountain, a little bit of the city, and so that's who they are.
Okay. People that are probably buying Walmart for other stuff.
Yeah, probably.
And so naturally they're just in Walmart, so gee, be a good time to look at a bike. So that's the challenge
so
that you're
up. Why would they look at Walmart's bike?
Well, because you haven't told them why they should look at yours. You haven't given them, you know, the right kind of reasons.
Strong, right?
See, people go where they're invited, you know. And Walmart's over there inviting them in to buy pantyhose, and while they're there, they're buying other stuff.
Oh, yeah, okay. I can see that.
See?
Yeah.
So if you're going to overcome that, you see, what you've got to figure out is you know, a good, solid story to tell people as to why they should buy from you instead of buying from Walmart. And it's got to be communicated. It's got to be told to them. Okay? Now, let me ask another question. What other products or services do you think these same people might buy? Are there other businesses that you know, they might be doing business with? What are the kinds of stores?
Well, I know I get quite a few that drop in here after they've been at the spa, the Nautilus gym down the street.
Okay.
So I think I see a few of them there. Well, like you say, if they're at Walmart, they could be also at the Gard Brothers sports store where
They could be buying some other sports equipment, other sports that they're involved in.
Is there anybody that you have that's one of your customers who maybe has bought a bike from you in the past?
Yeah, Tom, who owns that Nautilus.
Does he?
Okay.
Yeah, he's bought a bike here.
He
buys bikes here.
Is he pretty happy with what's happened?
Yeah, he's come back on several bikes.
He's brought his kids in. Okay. He probably has quite a lot of customers over there at that health spa. Any idea how many members they have over there now?
Yeah, I think he told me they had over 1,000.
Really? I wonder if Tom would be willing to maybe do some kind of an endorsement or maybe do some things to invite his customers to maybe do business with you. We call that a marketing alliance. It can be a really great way for you to tap into some new customers without investing a lot of money to do it. And if Tom would endorse it, that could be a real powerful marketing tool for you, don't you think?
Yeah. You're saying go get the
thousand. What if we did this? What if we approached Tom with the idea of sending a letter to all of his customers and thanking them for being a member of the health club? He would give them a discount coupon good for $50 towards the purchase of a new bike from your store. He could offer that as a thank you for being a member at his club. It gives him value. It endears his customers to him. And at the same time, it gives his customers reasons to come to you and buy a bike.
Okay, he sends me referrals.
Think it'd be worth talking to him about that?
Sure.
See, there's a lot of value in that for him, too. Okay, so what have we done now, guys? Set up an alliance possibility and another potential project, okay? And we've kind of taught him about some different things that he could do here that could generate a lot more business. Is there anybody else in your customer base that's like that? Anybody else who has done business with you in the past?
Well, I've got a lot of business owners who
I'm in the local chamber of commerce, and they've bought bikes from me.
Okay, all right. Anybody else that has customers in their business that would be similar to yours?
Not that I can think of. There might be.
Okay. We might want to look at that. Because it might be a good idea to explore some alliance possibilities there, don't you think? Okay. Tell me quickly about your media. Now, you say you do a newspaper ad about once a week with some specials.
No, I'd say it's probably 2 weekends a month. Out. Sometimes Schwinn will co-op with me. And so I'll run a Schwinn model.
Sometimes,
what's that?
Oh.
Yeah,
it was a meatball.
What were we talking about? Oh,
your advertising.
You do
2 weekends a month in the newspaper using Schwinn Co-op, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything else?
No. No.
That's it.
That's it.
That's all.
That's all.
How do you feel that works for you?
Some weekends it hits, some weekends it bombs. Sometimes they come in, and I'll make a lot of sales on Saturday, and sometimes they don't.
Any idea why?
No. Unless Walmart or Shopko runs something similar.
Okay.
But that's the problem. They'll run a bigger discount than I will. Yet people don't know the difference in the bikes.
I mean, they'll look at my name and then they'll look at Shopko's and they don't know the difference. So they'll take Shopko. I mean, but I got a better bike. Yet, how do I communicate that to the buyer?
That's what we need to figure out, because see, if you don't communicate that,
I lose the sale to Shopko.
That's right. They're going to go to the lower price every time. Okay. Now, we could go ahead and go through the rest of the media and all this, but I'm going to go ahead and, in the interest of time here, jump up to page 8, step 3. We're going to cover in depth in media and stuff on how to do that analysis on a later session. But let's jump up here to how to leverage the assets for exponential growth. Now, do you all see the assets? Do you all see the hidden marketing assets? Is this any clearer now than it was as far as what it is that you look for? And I got to tell you guys that this is really very typical. I mean, this is.
I was just going to ask, is this?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
You found what, half a dozen?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Every business that you go into has.
You just have to buy it. That's the key. The reason this outline is set up for you is to help you in the early stages, methodically, which is what I did early on too. I'd take my book out and I was listing the assets. I'd have a list of them and then I'd start checking them. But it would remind me of talking about all those assets, making sure we talked about them all. That's why this is set up the way it is.
And see, if you'll notice on the worksheet under each of these areas, you know, it lists the hidden assets that you should be looking for. Okay, like you know, under number 3, past, present, prospective customers. Look for a customer base that's not being worked, inactive customers, lack of a database, cross-selling opportunities, back-end opportunities, reactivation opportunities. See, these are the things you should be looking for. That's what these little you know, italicized in parentheses under here are. Those are to clue you in on these are what you should be looking for. Okay?
What were they looking for in the media? We found out earlier that he probably wasn't really emphasizing the right point.
Yeah.
You're looking for ways, aren't you, where you could dramatically improve, what you're really looking for is screw-ups now. Because then, by coming up with a project, you can create improvement.
You can fix it. Yeah, see, in the media here, see, it says, look for the different media they use. Do they have an objective? Do they use media for its strength? Do they budget enough to be effective? Do they spray and pray? We'll talk about all this stuff on Friday. Do they reach the right market with enough frequency? Is the message compelling? Is donation confused with advertising? Okay. In his case, probably the thing that, you know, is yeah. In his case, the thing that's probably the most immediate asset is the message. Is it a compelling message? Is he telling a story that differentiates him from the competition? He probably is not.
He's pretty much saying that he's not.
That's right. See, he's saying he's not doing that. Okay. But anyway, that's why we've structured this the way it is, and it can be very valuable for you when you first sit down and start working with your clients, because this tells you exactly what it is that you should be looking for. Under USP, look for underpromoted USP, including owner or staff expertise, competitive advantages, price leadership, differentiation, focus, competitive disadvantages, unique products, guarantees, unique benefits, services. Also look for ways in which extra value could be added. Okay? See, and that's what we found here, is that he has a better product, he has better service, he has a better guarantee, he's just not promoting it. Right? Okay?
So it may be on media that we would change the ad.
Yeah.
Integrate the USP, hopefully get more response to the ad. Not spend more money, but just get more effective ad.
That's right. Okay, so yeah, this is very typical. We're obviously role-playing this, but it is very typical of the way an average opportunity meeting will go.
I think ad, honestly, maybe I can count on one hand those businesses that I just said, you're doing it. I'll see you. There are a few.
One was Stokes Brothers up in Logan, Utah.
Yeah, they really turned up. They were on the verge of bankruptcy a few years ago, and they turned that thing around.
And I visited with him, and at the end I just said, see ya. Very, very effective, very good. Good presence there, and good. So there are a few, but that's what I say. I think I could count them on one hand. And I've, of course, interviewed a lot of business owners.
Okay, well, let's go to page 8 here, and let's see how we can leverage those hidden assets for exponential growth. Now, Richard, you know, right now you're doing about $400,000 a year.
That's right.
And you'd like to do about $500,000, 25% increase, $100,000.
Yes.
Now, right now, your customer worth is averaging about $500. Okay, guys, you can fill this in from the information that he's already given us, okay?
Yeah, what if the information you have here isn't accurate? Because I think a lot of business owners would be...
Richard,
sure they know.
Man, that's a great point, because a lot of times business owners don't know, okay? They really don't know. But that's okay. What we're more interested in here is their perception. Okay?
See, he made me at least kind of ballpark it. At least give him a gut feel for what I think happens.
See, on closing ratio, I just ask. I say, look, if 10 people come in, how many of those people buy on average? Probably about 3. Okay, good. 30%. On average, how much does each customer spend? Well, a bike's $350, and then they buy the warranty and the helmet and all that stuff. So, probably about $500 overall. Okay. So you want to just get their feel for it, and it's important here. This is really an important point. Make note of it, that you use their numbers, not yours. Okay. Because if it's his numbers, then he's already bought into it. Okay. I don't want to say, well, I bet your closing ratio is probably about 30%, huh? Yeah, okay. And your customer worth would be about $500. See, no, I want to use his number. I want to get him to tell me. Okay? Does that make sense? All right, so on key ratios here on page 8, his customer worth is $500. His closing ratio is 30%. So how many customers did he have last year? Well, take gross sales of $400,000 divided by the average customer worth of $500 tells you he had 800 buying customers last year, right? Did everybody see how he did that?
Yeah, but he said only 300 people bought from him last year. But we don't care, right?
When did I say that?
No. Customer database. He said
no. He said, those? 300 on the database were active.
How many
yeah.
bought from him last year, and he said 300.
Yeah. Well, he may not have all of his customers on the database.
We don't really care if they're active.
Yeah, and see, I probably would have questioned that too, but see, he may not have had all of his customers on the database.
Yeah, okay. There's customers that come in and buy with cash, or they come in and buy with a check, and I don't get them recorded, you know, or some. Or,
yeah.
Okay. But you're right. You want to go again with the perception of what he's saying. And the numbers always work out, A, later, or B, they're just for illustration, and that's all you want.
Okay, so if he had about 800 buyers last year, he actually saw about 2,667 prospects.
Well,
do you guys see how we work that out? Okay. By the way, if you have calculators, you got to bring them from now on, okay, because this will be helpful for you. Okay, so Richard, last year you had about 800 buyers, but you had about 2,600 people through the store, which is about 51 a week, or about, you're open 6 days a week, right?
Uh-huh.
See, so that's almost 9 a day.
Oh, that's about right.
9 people a day you got coming through the door, right? Okay. Well, so with 2,667 prospects and a 30% closing ratio, that's giving you the 800 buyers. At $500 each, that's putting you at $400,000. Okay, now there's 3 ways that you can increase your business. 3 ways you can grow. Now you want a 25%.
I'll bet you're going to tell me.
I am going to tell you what those 3 ways are. The first way you could grow your business 25% would be to get a 25% increase in traffic, a 25% increase in the number of prospects through the door. Okay?
Right.
So instead of, like last year, you had 2,667, You would have to have 3,334 to get you the 25% increase. Okay, so instead of having 9 a day coming in, you're going to have almost 11 a day coming in. So that's not too bad. I mean, another couple of people a day. If you get another two people a day through the door, that's going to give you and maintain the same 30% closing ratio and same $500 average worth, that's going to give you the increase. Okay?
So you guys do that, you get me more prospects?
Well, we can look at it, like maybe work alliances like we talked about, maybe doing a better job with your advertising would do that for you. There's a number of ways that you can increase your number of prospects. But that would give you the 20% and 25% increase, that'd give you the $500,000 a year. Now that's one way to do it, okay? Another way you could do it, Richard, would be to increase the closing ratio. In other words, right now, you're closing 30%. Now, if we could get a 25% improvement in closing ratio, in other words, instead of closing 30%, close 37.5%, close 3.7 people out of 10.
Well, that's not that much. I could probably do that myself.
Then why aren't you doing it? Then why aren't you doing it?
Don't want it.
But see, that'd give you $500,000 gross sales as well. Okay. And all we have to do is raise closing rate by, from 30% to 37.5%. That's pretty reasonable.
That's though everybody.
Everybody. On the average. You, Tom, and Bill. They'd all have to do that. Okay, now that's the second way you could do it. Now a third way that you could get the 25% growth would be maintain the same number of traffic, okay? Maintain the same closing ratio, but increase the average customer worth. In other words, let's get each customer to either spend more when they first come in and buy the bike, or get them to come back more often throughout the year and buy more stuff. That's why it would be important to constantly work that customer base and reinvite those people back in. So we'd have to increase that 25%. So instead of selling each one $500, you'd have to sell each one $625. Okay, have to increase it from $500 to $625. Now, if you were to do that, see, that would give you the $500,000 in sales as well. So you see, Richard, either one of those ways, we could either increase the number of prospects, we could increase the closing rate, or we could increase the average customer worth. Either one of those three things would give you the 25% increase in sales. Which one do you think we ought to work on?
Well, that's it right there. Do all three.
It makes a lot of sense. You're a bright guy. What if we did do all three? I mean, what if we worked on getting more prospects? We also worked at improving closing rates. We also work at improving average customer worth. Well, let's just see what would happen if we could get a 25% increase in each of those areas. Well, let's say we get a 25% increase in number of prospects. That gives us 3,334 prospects. But we also work at training Bill and Ted and Bob and Mike and everybody else that works here and get that closing ratio up 37.5%. See, now that's going to give you... That's going to give you 1,250 buyers, and at the same time, let's get that customer worth up to another 25% to 625, and look at what your sales do now. 781,406 dollars.
Have to get a new shop.
Well, no, I don't know that it's realistic to think you could get that much of growth overall. But it would seem realistic to me that if we could work at improving each one of those areas, right? Maybe we wouldn't have to get 25% in each one, but if we could just get maybe even 10% in each one, that'd give you 33% growth overall. Okay? Now, aside, here's a note. On the bottom of this page, it says, note 10% equals 33, 15 equals 30, 53, and so on. Okay, it's a misprint there at 25%. It should not be 80%. It should be 95%. Because if you figure this out, his net growth is $381,406. $381,406 divided by 400,000. Okay? Gives him 95% growth. So if you did get a 25% increase in each of those areas, Richard, you'd almost double your sales.
Hey.
So, you know, I don't know that that's realistic. But all you need, if you just improve a little bit in each of those areas, 10% even improvement in each of those areas, give you more than what you're looking for, 33%. So, I mean, it seems to me that if we implemented some kind of a marketing system that would consistently help you to work in all three of those areas, then our chances for success would be pretty darn good, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys, look at the clock, what we did up here. Okay, look at the clock up there. See where we are? Okay, we started this at 3 o'clock. It's now 10 to 4. We've done 5 minutes trust and rapport, 40 minutes of the assets, 10 minutes leveraging the asset, or 10 minutes to close. Okay? So you see how this works? See how this all falls into place? Okay. So, Richard, it would seem to me if we could somehow implement some kind of a marketing plan or a way to work on all three of those areas, that your chances for growth would be pretty high, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me tell you what we do here. Now, what I would recommend is that we do several different projects with you. Okay? First project I think we ought to do is that unique selling proposition. And what that means is we need to really define why people should do business with you as opposed to Walmart, Shopko, everybody else. Okay? And that then needs to be integrated into all the other marketing that you do. Now, what we'll do in that project is several things. Number one, we'll do a little focus group with you and your staff. Really figure out what all your strengths are and all the reasons why people should buy from you. Then I want to do a little customer survey and talk to your customers and find out why they do business with you. Get their perspective on it. Then we'll do a competitive analysis and really figure out what it is that your competition does and doesn't do and figure out how you could be more competitive. Finally, we'll put that all together and write that up in a way that you can then integrate that into your marketing. Now, that's the first project I think we do, because that's really going to set the stage for everything else. We want to really define and come up with some real strong, compelling reasons why people should do business with you. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Okay. So that's the first thing I think we
should
do.
That's the USP?
USP. The second project I'd recommend that we do is look at that closing rate, you know, and as you said, if we could only get that up a little bit, the results would be dramatic. I mean, if we could only get it up, you know, from 30% to 40%, you'd get the increases that you'd need to get, you know. And so we need to do some training with your staff. We need to make sure that they're all telling the same story. We need to make sure that USP is part of the sales process that they're doing. We need to have a follow-up system to capture that other 70% of the people who aren't buying, and that's what we would help you to do in project number two of leverage your current marketing. So I'd also recommend that we look at that project as well. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Okay, the third thing I think we ought to work on is your customer base. Now, you got 2,000 people on the list right now, and we should be adding more every day. If we could re-invite them back in or give them additional reasons to come back and buy from you, maybe they would. Maybe we could use that as a tool to get those people to come back and buy more. Instead of spending $500, we could get that average worth up to $550, $600 by getting them to come back more often throughout the year. So I'd like to work with you to perhaps craft some letters or some offers or some things we could do to reactivate those people and get those people back in again. And that would be project number three. Okay? So that would be the third project I'd recommend. And then finally, the fourth project, I think we ought to talk to Tom over at the health club and maybe look at some other areas where we could establish some alliances and perhaps set up some ways to work their customer base and get those people in.
Well, I'd like to get my customer base out. I think there's more than just Tom. think we could find some more.
Okay. So that would be an important project too then, wouldn't it? Okay. So I think that's where we ought to start.
Are you the one that approaches Tom, or do we both, or how does that work?
We can do it any way you'd like. I think it would be best if we could both talk to him. You know, you know him well and have a good rapport with him. We ought to both sit down and talk with him, and I can explain how the thing's going to work and what's in it for him, and together we can work out a real good program for him.
Okay.
So, Rich,
what have I given him all through this thing?
A hard time.
No, you've actually given him, you've approved everything that he said you have.
What are they called?
Trial closes is what he's been doing.
He's giving trial closes to me. I'm giving him buying signals.
Buying signals.
When I say things like, so you guys write the letters? See, that sends a signal to him that I don't want to do that. You guys do the sales training? And that'll happen. You'll get that happening. You'll get prospects that start asking that kind of stuff. And that you need to key in on that and say, geez, that's something he doesn't want to do. I need to make sure I sell that, you know. Yeah.
Great. Okay, so I suggest we do those four projects. And, you know, if we look at minimum, you know, sales increase that you want to achieve is of $100,000, you know, I think that if we can get some minor improvements in each of those areas, that should be a realistic objective. Now, if you did additional $100,000 in business, Richard, what kind of gross profit would that mean to you? You know, what's your typical gross margin?
Additional $100,000?
Yeah.
Well, my costs are about half, so I have about 50%.
Okay, so potentially then, if you did another $100,000, assuming that your business is already at least at a break-even position or profit position now, $50,000 could come right down to the bottom line potentially then, couldn't it? If you did another $100,000?
Well, I'd have some, depends who sold them. If I sold them all, yeah, it'd come right to my pocket.
Maybe some sales commission or something like that.
Yeah, Bill and Tom get some commission.
How much do you think that would be?
Well, it depends how much they sell, which right now is probably between them about a third, so I'd lose some commission.
Say ten grand, maybe?
Yeah, probably that.
Okay. Well, now, to do each one of these four projects, Richard, we're looking at $1,500 per project, or a total investment of $3,000. No, $6,000.
You're not supposed to choke
him. Yeah, you're having a hard time, man. I just had a heart attack.
I'm choking because it was so low. What a deal. I mean,
I know. I was going to say, let's do it, baby.
Well, look at this. You know, if you could generate additional gross profit of $50,000, invest $6,000 in the projects, an additional cost maybe $10,000 for sales commissions, and maybe, you know, to do some letters and things like that. In fact, I'm going to add another $5,000 onto that in case we have to maybe do some additional ads or postage or whatever that might be. $15,000 there. See, that's still going to leave you with
$30,000.
Yeah, $29,000 in net profit that comes right down to the bottom line, goes right in your pocket. Okay.
What kind of return on that is that? If I give you $6,000, I get $29,000.
Well, it's
better than you're doing on the bicycle.
That's better than it's better than you're doing at the bank too, I'll tell you.
How rude. You tell me I can't buy bikes.
See, Richard, that's 483% return on your investment, and that's minimal. I mean, that's if we only achieve the 25% growth overall, I think that's pretty reasonable, and possibly you could even do some better than that if we were able to get some good improvements in each of those three areas like we discussed. So you know, I'm excited and would like to go ahead and move forward with it. If it's okay with you, the first thing we need to do is schedule that little focus group meeting with you and your staff. Now, I could do that with you next week. Wednesday would work for me. You want to get your whole staff together, so maybe it would be better if we did it early in the morning or late in the afternoon, or you tell me.
We close at 6, so if you came at 6:15,
okay.
Do it in the evening.
Wednesday okay with you? Okay, let's plan Wednesday at 6:15, and probably need about about an hour and a half to 2 hours to do that, so make sure your staff has that time set aside. Is that okay?
Okay.
Okay, now, I need you to bring two things to that meeting, if you would.
Yes.
Okay? First thing I need you to bring is a sampling of your customer base.
Oh, I do that.
Okay, pull out about 50 to 100 names of people, active, inactive, whatever, because we want to then do that customer survey. But just kind of pull those out at random and have those ready with when you come to the meeting with names and phone numbers and all that so that we can begin that survey. Okay, is that no problem?
Okay,
and the second thing is you need the check for $1,500 for the first project, and I'll just pick that up from you when we finish the meeting on Wednesday. So if you could have that ready, we'd be set to go.
Okay.
Sound good? Yeah. Okay. We'll see you Wednesday at 6:15.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank
you. You always collect that way?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It makes it feel
always.
Less painful.
For me.
See, I'll tell you, you know, there's a couple of reasons why you want to do that, okay? Number one is you want to get your money in advance so that you're not going to have to be chasing these guys down for collections. Secondly, it, I forgot my second point. The second point, the second point is by collecting your money up front like that, you don't have to get into, you know, signed agreements and contracts and all that kind of stuff. And that's a very important thing. Because, see, if I can just shake his hand and, hey, we're set and ready to go, you know, it's a much more comfortable deal for him than if I pull out, you know, a 14-page contract with, you know, all kinds of fine print that he has to abide by. See, then it becomes a very anxiety-provoking situation for him. And he's, oh, man, I better get my attorney involved and get him to review this and all that. Whereby, you know, if we can just do it verbally like this, no written agreement, then, hey, it makes it really easy for him to make that decision.
How often are you able to do it that way?
Oh, 99.9%.
Most people will do it without having anything written from me, but just sign it out.
Okay, now, what we do, though, is we will then go back with a written outline or written proposal as far as what we are going to do, which we will sign and say, like, well, we've got the four projects here, we'll outline the four projects and say, this is what we're going to do, this is when we're going to do
them. That's what you get on disk.
Yeah, we'll give you that on disk, okay? So then he's kind of protected by having this written document that we sign that says, here's what we will do, okay? We're protected because he's paying up front. If he doesn't pay, we don't do the project, so.
And then you don't move on to step two, to project two. You complete one, let him pay for that, complete that, and then you go through the same process again to move on to number two.
Well, you're doing it all along while you're working one. Yeah. You start by, as you start nearing the end of one, you start getting them ready for number two. You start getting them set for the check. You start, and we do it about monthly to help with cash flow for him. We found that if we set these projects up on a monthly basis, it's easier than to do it in 4 weeks, you know.
And typically, how often do they move from project one on through?
I'd say an average client, you'll have between 3.5 and 5 projects. So
if they buy into one, you're pretty sure they'll buy 3 to 4. I mean,
well,
they're pretty much
fine. It depends on what you do. Yeah, I mean, you gotta perform.
And you're pretty specific about 3.5. What's this half project?
Oh, that's just an average. Just average.
Yeah. Some will do 3. Some will do 5. Some will do 2. Some will do 4. Some will do 3. Some will do 7.
Yeah. See. Now, as far as the fees that you charge, you know, the fees are really up to whatever you feel good about and whatever the market will bear.
My 43 million payroll client got charged $2,000 per project.
I'm doing one right now. You know, it was a fairly good sized company here in town, and in fact, it was interesting. 21st Century Marketing Systems was recently named as one of the 100 fastest growing companies in the state of Utah. We went to this banquet where they gave us a certificate and all that for doing that. We sat next to this on the table with this other guy that had this travel business, and we started talking, and anyway, he turned out to be a client. I turned him into a client. And you know, I went through this process with him. He says, well, how much is it per project? And I said, $3,750 a project. He said, okay.
You just pulled that out of the air?
Yeah! I'm just going to go for it, you know. I mean,
that's not a lot of money.
It's not.
I mean, if you spend a month on fire, I mean, I don't know.
See, and that helps too. See, when he sees, when we talk about it as a month, you should spend no longer than 8 to 10 hours. But to him, it's a month.
See?
And so it's all, we've done this testing long enough that we kind of know. He doesn't care, really, how much time. That's not the issue. The issue's results.
The issue's bottom line.
You know.
Well, see, I normally probably would have tried to collect in a meeting before I came back, but I kind of like the way you do that. You just schedule the meeting and then say, by the way, have the check ready for me.
Yeah. And even though I told him that, I'll go there, I'll do that whole meeting. I'll go there, I'll do that whole meeting. He will not give me the check until I ask for it. I mean, even though
Marcy, no matter, you told him. I mean, it's so funny. You walk into the staff meeting, you'll kind of look around and see if you see a check. You know, it's usually after hours.
Oh, yeah, you'll look around
and say, now, you know that's supposed to be a check. Where's it, right? And so you go through the home. I had one just the other day where I thought I saw it in his pocket. So I told him clearly. I said, you have that check there. Okay, yeah. Well, it wasn't. So I get to the end and I go, so, are you okay with the check? Oh, yeah, check. Oh, yeah. I'll go down and get it. You know.
But you'll do the meeting.
Yeah.
Before you.
Yeah. Because it also helps him feel like he owes it to you. Even if he didn't have it, and I've had that happen where they didn't have it. But I've gone through this 2-hour USP exercise, demonstrated a lot of expertise, and it kind of helped solidify it.
He didn't lay the guilt on the world heavy.
Well, he kind of finally said, Jesus, this is worth it. He needed a little more selling. We've done it where we said, listen, we'll do the first session free. You pay us after you think it's worth it.
Have you ever had an agreement with somebody and done the first session and had them stick you and say, I don't see if there's enough here to...
No, because you get paid in advance.
But you'll do the first session.
Oh, yeah, that first staff, but that's 2 hours. So I've never gone 8 to 10 hours. Okay, you guys did.
But you've done the first.
If he won't pay me after that first one, then that's it.
I'm questioning whether you should ask for the check before you start.
Well, I'll tell you.
I'm just, you know.
Do that first meeting.
I don't like to waste time.
If you do the first meeting right, I mean, they're on.
So it's kind of your inventory that you're investing, which is your time to wrap this deal up.
And that's fair. It's a fairly, for some businesses, it's a fairly sizable investment.
Yeah, it is.
On one meeting, 1 hour long meeting that you've given them. And so if you go back in to do the second meeting with the staff and whatnot, you can just reaffirm with him the things that you said you would do. He would like to feel a little more comfortable.
Okay, any other questions? Let's take a 5.
Yeah.